This is why we love racing in all its forms.
And it's Lock and Varats, Pride's Easy Feed Victoria Cup.
The rail now for Zipping Rambo goes through in the Sandown Cup.
Twilight Payment, what a ride, what a win in a cup we'll never forget.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Cracking the Codes. We're back at the Valley today after a week of racing, which has driven some people mad. I don't know if it's driven my cohorts mad, Simone and Dan. How are you guys? Good morning.
Very well, thanks, Matt.
Did you struggle, Dan? Because you have a bit of a habit.
but that's extended across many codes, isn't it? So there was part of me that enjoyed my Tuesday and latter part of Thursday afternoon off because there wasn't any Victorian races. So that helped me a little bit, but I had many trot meetings. They added one on Wednesday at Melton, so I was busy with Trots Vision and that race meeting to call. The Olympic Games has kept me pretty honest as well. I've got involved a bit of fluttering in certain sporting events. I don't know if I'm too proud to say them out aloud, but I've been enjoying it. And the good thing with the Olympics in Japan is that the time zone is so close to ours, only an hour difference. So we're not having super late nights like I used to in the previous couple of Olympic Games. So I've had a busy week. I've booked a few extra hours sleep next week. It might have been the right week for me to not be involved with a few gallops meetings, but Moonee Valley today, wow, we've got some big fields for the Valley, a number of emergencies in each of the races, and let's hope the inclement weather or the rain stays away.
Indeed. Simone, how's your week been?
It's been fairly normal, to be honest, Matt. Fortunately, we've still been racing with the greyhounds. And look, I did hear some different opinions about the horse racing week off. And my very naive mind about it all, I think, well, people are still working. They're just not working at the races. So hopefully it has had the desired effect. But whether or not that's the reality, only the people in the industry will really know. But it just seems to me that the horses still need to be worked in the morning. They still need to be fed. Their boxes need to be cleaned out. It's just saving that trip to the races. But greyhound racing has still been going strong. And like Dan, I've been watching a little bit of the Olympics as well, particularly the horse events. And it's been wonderful having the same time zone, or relatively the same time zone, because the dressage for three nights in a row has been fantastic. So I've been glued to that. I did catch a little bit of the women's skateboarding the other morning, sitting
at
the trials at Geelong.
I couldn't work out where their skill was. They kept falling off.
And to be honest,
one of them was wearing pyjamas.
Yeah, to be honest, it certainly didn't float my boat at all. Maybe the hardcore skating where you get the men who are doing the big half pipes and things will be a little bit more enthralling than the other skating.
Indeed.
But people would probably say it's the same as watching dressage. So their own.
It's not my horse discipline, dressage. Just quickly, guys, we've got a couple of really, really good guests and we want to have a good chat to them this morning. I love this guy's name, Dan. Give us a snapshot of Bob Kutchenmeister.
Yeah, Bob is 81 years of age. He's a trainer driver. He's had four wins this year in the sulky as a driver. He's sprightly. He belies his age, and he's still got a love for the industry as deep as it was when he first started out 50 years ago. He actually started out pretty late, and we'll have a good chat with Bob. He's a real character. He's got a backstory with an involvement as a limo and taxi driver before he got involved in harness racing, and he's got a mare called Leanne is going really well at the moment, and there's been only a few that would be living today to have won races at the showgrounds, Moonee Valley and Melton. He hasn't quite got the Melton one yet, but he's on the cusp.
And Simone, we do have themes on this show, and just in really short and sharp, Craig Evans is going to be one of our guests this morning.
That's right. Former WA race caller Craig Evans, he's travelled the world calling races, much like Matt Hill that we spoke to last week. And, of course, we had Clint Hutchinson on a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking about international racing. So Craig's going to join us this morning and we'll get his version of events.
This is RSN Cracking the Codes.
Okay, on Cracking the Codes, it's time for our first guest this morning. And Bob Kutchenmeister has been involved in harness racing for quite a while, but he was actually a late bloomer. and has had an incredible year this year. At 81 years of age, Bob has got a really good trotting mare called Leanne Leanne. Bob's driven 4 winners this year. I think he's driven 7 winners in the last 2 years from a limited amount of drives, and he is still as passionate as he has been when he first fell in love with harness racing just over 50 years ago. And I'm pleased that he was able to join us this morning on Cracking the Codes. Bob Kuchermeister, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm very well. You've got a fantastic story because you weren't, unlike a lot of people in harness racing, didn't grow up in a harness racing family. But when you met harness racing head on, you fell in love from the first day.
Yeah, yes, this is true. I'd never seen a harness race or anything to do with them, really. And a friend of mine was into it, and he said, "Oh, have a drive on this," knowing that I had had a lot to do with horses. And I sat behind this old thing, and great big monster of a horse he was. And I thought, hey, this is terrific. I didn't think I was going to trot this fast.
Did you? Was it, because this brings us to a pet subject, Bob, because all three of us have at some point sat in the back of a sulky for whatever reason, and I sat up in the back of one up at Chris Alford's and nearly slid off. I couldn't believe how vulnerable I felt in that little seat. Did you feel safe in that seat the first time you sat on it?
Look, I can't remember that. Oh, yeah, I think I did, yeah. I went up the road, or actually down the road to start with, and then back up. He was down near Clifton Springs on the peninsula, and, I felt all right. I got the feel of it. It's sort of a bit different to riding a horse, which I'd grown up doing, of course.
And Bob, from that day on, you've been involved. Now, you were, just tell us what age you were at that stage and what happened from that time onwards.
Oh, look, we haven't got enough time. I was 30 years old and in the taxi industry, and so was this guy. He had a dairy farm and a taxi, he's an industrial sort of, Reg Scott was his name. And Reg and I were talking one night, sitting in a cab waiting for a job, and he said he had trotting horses. And I said, oh, yeah, you know, I'd heard of them and whatever, but didn't know much about it. And he said, but you can ride a horse, I heard. I said, yeah, well, I can. I used to. And he said, well, I need one ridden. Well, as it turned out, it was an easy horse to ride. It didn't do anything wrong. And then he said, well, I'll give you a drive on this one. Drive, how do you drive? So he gave me a few pointers about, you know, steering the thing and so forth. And away I went.
How long did it take you to advance, Bob? Because it's such a skill. I mean, you know, the nuances of the race and all those sorts of things. And how long before you became competent at it?
A couple of years, I would say. I would say a couple of years. The first horse I got was a bit of an outlaw. His name was Devrats, and if you spell that backwards, it spells starved. And the guy that had him, he ran the pound at Geelong, and he'd rescued him from a paddock, and the horse was down on the ground and nearly dead, and they put an injection in him and got him up, and he then commenced to break him in, and he was... Again, it was a riding thing, and he said, look, he's a bit of a goer, this bloke. I don't want to put him in a cart until we get control of him. You ride him. So he wasn't so easy to ride, let me tell you.
What became of Devrach? Rach, or whatever, however it's pronounced backwards. Did he win a few races?
He won one race, and I don't know, about 20 places or something. I don't know how many starts he had. I couldn't really tell you. But I fooled around with him for a long time, and because that gets you into the industry and you meet the people, and all locally around Geelong mostly. And as I got going, I think the first person of recognition that gave me a good chat was Alfie Simons, and he gave me a few pointers and said, this little horse used to gallop out of the barrier and half bolt and carry on. and he gave me a few pointers that were a help. And then George Gaffer's never ending. George and I sat down many times in between races and had a talk. He's a great old fella.
Just on George Gaff, because he's probably the greatest legend of all time, and he represents history that most of us weren't even alive for. And I remember him telling me stories about putting the horses on the railway carriages and taking them to Adelaide. What sort of stories? What sort of an insight did you get from George about George's life?
His life, not much. It was mainly about horses and things, and he was one of the smartest drivers I think I've ever seen, in that he could balance a horse on his fingertips, and he said, you know, it's all about your fingertips, and he was quite right, and it is today too. So that was a big help when you handle trotters. I've had a few paces, of course, but it stems back partly to my youth, because I started off with a guy. I would have been 12 years old, I suppose, 13 perhaps, I'm not sure. It used to take the horses, the grey horses, from the track, galloping track, and calm them down for the South Australian Police Force. And he was a very clever man with a wily horse. And he gave me more pointers than anybody ever did. My dad was not a bad rider, but he was a fairly hard man on the horse. Keith McBride was his name, this fellow, and I used to go up to his place when I could, and he'd be working these horses with tin cans battling around them and all sorts of things. And he lived alongside the railway line, and he'd take them out and stand them alongside the railway line with the steam engine going past, you know. And he sort of said, it's all about working out the horse's brain, and isn't this the truth about horses? And it still is.
Bob, in over your 50 years of being with horses and working with them and driving them, and you're still driving today, what's been the biggest change, do you think, over that time in harness racing?
Everything.
Right.
Everything. For the better or for the worse, or a little bit in between, Bob?
Yeah, it's in between. Some things aren't as good. You know, handicapping's always a problem, no matter how you handicap, it's a problem. I raced yesterday, as Dan knows, and there's a horse there that won 174,000 or something that won the race. Did it win the race, or was it another one? No, it won the race, I think.
Yeah, Imperial Wiz, yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, you know, boy, it probably won a lot of this in an early race and won a Group 1 or something. But it's pretty hard when I've got a temperamental thing that mare is. She's a real handful. She got a little squeeze coming down at the first turn, and she said, I don't want to do this anymore. It took me until Glenn Williams came up on the outside of me, she wasn't going to race. You're sort of dealing with her head all the time. But then again, she's had 30-something starts for me, 31, I think. Had 10 for Mick, I don't count Mick's starts, because he was in trouble with her from the jump. She was a sort of a handful, but I've got to work all this out with her and what she's thinking. And it's not just that she's not a machine. You don't just put sharp in her and say go. It doesn't work like that.
And her name's Leanne, Bob. And look, you've had a really good season with her. You've driven her to win four races this year. And she's going well enough that you would think she's on the cusp of winning a metropolitan race at Melton. And if that is to be the case, that would complete a unique treble for you, because you've driven a winner at the showgrounds, you've driven a winner at Moonee Valley, and to get the Melton win, and you've got the horse, I think, that's good enough to do it now. I'm sure that you are looking to that as a major goal for you.
That's a major one. There was several major ones. The first night I went to the trots was at Geelong, and I saw the McNamara Cup. And I was impressed, and I thought, gee, you know, if I get a trotter, which I did soon after, I'm going to win that one day. Well, I haven't. I've never won it.
Plenty of time, Bob.
October it is, yeah. Bob. October 23 this year it is.
Oh, is it? Yeah, right. And I've also tried hard to win the one that I won at Redwood Day, the catering final. And I've won a couple of heats of it and never won a final. So I've done that. Leanne did that for me. So that was another one that I wanted to win.
Bob, you're in your early 80s now, and as we know, I know through Brian Gath especially, the older he's become, the craftier he's become. Has it been more difficult as the years have passed to get up and do it and physically and all those sorts of things, or are you just getting smarter at it?
Probably getting lazier at it, actually. But no, look, there's not much difference. Everything's got to be regular with a horse. If you start getting up at 5 o'clock this morning and 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, they're going to get a bit cranky. Things have got to be done on time. Their work's got to be to suit the particular horse. They're not all the same. You can't say, oh, well, I work my horse 10 miles. Some you can, some you can't. So it goes, you know. I'm any craftier.
Sorry, Bob. It was worth getting up a couple of months ago and heading to the Geelong track because you won a race. It was the Bob Powell Memorial, or Jack Powell's Memorial, I should say, and it was quite an emotional win for you. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that win with Leanne?
Well, yeah, that's quite a story, really. But basically, I was good friends with Jack Powell for a long, long time. He's an ex-policeman at Meredith. He's a man who's very set in his ways, and if he had a decision to do something, he said, we will do this. Anyway, I raced a horse that he had given to a couple of people, and it had won 5 races, and it was the mother of this horse. And she was all right. She was a nice little mare in her own way, but she was a bit temperamental to drive. She sort of decided she might break today and not tomorrow, and you couldn't figure out why. And I never won a race with her. I don't know that I even ran a place with her. I might have. But anyway, I give her back to Jack, and I said, no, I can't get on with her. So we went along, and we bred from her. We bred Country Cop, who was... he won 4 races, and he was a bit like she was. Brooke drove her a lot, I should say, because he was a nice, gentle horse to drive. Jack, incidentally, was one of the best horse breakers I've ever had anything to do with. And what else did we breed from her that went on? Apart from Leanne, there was another one, I think. And there was one that was a failure by, by Pulp Fiction. So that was a cranky thing, and Nick broke it in and couldn't get on with it at all. And I wasn't even going to try. I said, you're wasting your time. It hasn't got a brain, you know. So we got rid of that one. And then Jack said, I'm going to send Possum, as we call that, Possum Point was her name. I'm going to send Possum to Danny Boucher. And I said, oh, well, we were all good friends with Stewie Ashby, of course, who runs a start-up at Castlemaine. And I said, oh, Stewie was saying he's a bit of a handful to handle when he's going to even go with the dummy, you know. And he has never done a natural, and we couldn't get Possum in foal for 2 years. And Jack said, oh, he'll do a natural, he'll be all right with it, blah, blah, blah. So the funny side of the story is Jack said, you organise it. So I rang Stewie and he said, oh, I don't know about a natural with him. He said, he's a bit of a handful. I said, well, that's what Jack wants. He said, oh, what about the mare? He said, oh, you know, I got the other foal, or one of the other foals out of her. And he said, she was a little bit temperamental. And I said, well, what do you reckon? He said, oh, well, we'll give it a go. So Jack got the vet out. The vet came, oh, I think, several days in a row, and then he said to Jack, she's right to go. So Jack rang me at 2:30 in the afternoon. And he said, we're taking that mare to Castlemaine right now. Get here. 30-minute trip to Jack's, get the float on. He said, ring Stuart, tell him we're coming. So I rang Stuart in. And he said, oh, What time are you going to get here? I said, probably about 6 o'clock. Oh, yeah, all right, he said, okay. So we got there, and Stewie came out with his cricket pads on and his arm guards and his trash hat and his vest and led this horse up. He was the quietest thing with the mare you've ever come across. He was as gentle as a lamb. We then brought the horse home, and this was a foal. And Jack rang me and he said, we got a filly foal. I said, bad luck. He said, why? I said, you know, I don't like training mares, and especially fillies. Yeah, oh, well, what are we going to do? And I said, well, I haven't got facilities to break her in. You're past breaking her in. So I said, we better give it a Mick. So she went over to Mick's, and Mick broke her in. Did a good job with her. He had her nicely broken in. But as she went along, she became a bit silly about working with other horses, which Mick did all the time. And he said, well, you have a drive on her. She was 3-year-old. I think she'd had a couple of starts. And, she walked down to the track nicely and did all those things right. And as soon as I got on the track, she wanted to buck and kick and carry on. And I thought, yeah, I know what's wrong with you, but I can't say anything. I didn't want to offend anybody, you know. So I left it alone, and I got drove her again at 4-year-old. Mick had raced her at Coolmore that I was in a race one day. He came from the back and roared down the outside to run second. And I thought, okay, she's as good a trotter as we thought she might be. And then he ran third at Ballarat one night with no sprint lane. If he'd had a sprint lane, he would have won by 50 metres. And I thought, yeah, okay, she's pretty good. And left that alone, and then eventually he got sick of it. I think half the problem was the people that worked for him would go to get her out of the yard, and she'd want to kill you. You couldn't get near her. And I noticed that Laura, his partner, could just walk in there and the horse would come up to her. And I thought, there's something going on here. So every time I was over at Mick's, I watched this, and Laura always gave her a hug and a pat, told her what a great horse she was, and a pick on the way out the gate and all this sort of thing.
You've got the touch, Bob.
Yeah, she's got the touch.
So to stop females getting cranky, you just give them a hug. This is the notes I'm learning as I go through life, Bob, that these are the little secrets. Hey, speaking of shenanigans, as in you thought that mating might have been a bit more violent than it turned out to be back in the day, but you used to drive limos and taxis, and I can't help myself, Bob, when I get into a taxi. I don't spend much time in limos, but I always ask the taxi driver what's the weirdest thing that's ever happened with a non-paying customer or something that may have been going on in the taxi. Have you got any particularly interesting memories of your days driving limos and taxis?
Oh, lots of them. You haven't got time.
Or are they not published, or are they not sort of presentable on a family show?
Some of them aren't. Some of them aren't, believe me. But some of them are too.
You didn't used to drive taxis in Geelong in the late 80s, did you?
Yes.
Can I apologise then? Because me and my mates used to get the taxi to park near Geelong College Junior School, and then we'd bolt without paying by jumping over the school fence.
Yeah. Oh, well, I can give you a story about a fellow that used to do that. He lived in Braund Avenue, and he got a name for it. Well, actually, he didn't live in Braund Avenue. That's where he always got out of the cab. And he ran up one house and up a vacant block and over a fence, and we never knew where he lived. And the night shift drivers were all talking about it. It was a regular thing for Saturday night nightclub. And I got him from Warren Ponds one night, and I thought, what am I going to do with you? Anyway, we got to where we were going in Braund Avenue, and he just flew out of the cab, and I wheeled out and up the block after him with the cab.
Oh. You did a Clint Eastwood on him. Dirty Harry, you charged at him in a Cadillac.
He's coming over the fence, and I couldn't stop in the grass and pinned his back legs on the fence.
That'll teach him.
Oh, we're learning more and more about you, Bob. Hey, can I ask you one thing? I'm fascinated by the life experiences of taxi drivers and also origins of surnames, and you do have the world's best surname. We have a list of them. There's a guy who runs the Horsham Greyhounds called Justin Brilliant. But I think Kutchenmeister is as good a name as I've heard for a long time. What's the origins of Kutchenmeister?
Well, I always thought it was Austrian because my great-grandfather came out here from Austria. And, you know, we do these family things these days and they trace it back to the 16th century and all this sort of thing. Well, one of my aunties and also one of my nieces did one and they both came up with the same thing at separate times, I might add. They both came up with the same thing, that it originally came from Germany. And apparently this great-grandfather escaped out of Austria with his family and was wanted for treason. He was in the army. And that's where the name came from, Germany, originally.
Right. So you've got...
And it means kitchen master.
So can you cook?
I cook my own tea every night.
Well, you are a kitchen master then, aren't you?
My little hut, I am, yeah.
And you're at Inverleigh, Bob. So have you always been around that Geelong area?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, since I was 19 years old. I come from the north and south Australia. But, I've sort of always been around here.
Got a winner for us in the next week or so?
Sorry?
Got a winner for us?
Oh, well, I've only got the girl racing. She's... going to have a bit of a break for a week. I'm flooded out. Barwon's come up and flooded my track. It happens quite often.
Is that right?
Sorry?
That's right. The track's been flooded by the river.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's it's got a creek that goes around the creek into a dam. The creek goes across the track, or under the track actually, and into the dam, and then it comes out of the dam and goes back to the river. And both of those are crossings. They're dips. They're good for teaching horses to trot. I always say if they can trot through that, they can trot anywhere. And that's pretty good. Pretty accurate, I should say. But at the moment, the Barwon's up and it's come back up and it's flooded one of the crossings. So.
Well, you better, because you can't do much, you better go over to the Inverleigh Bakery, the legendary Inverleigh Bakery, and get me one of those vanilla slices and whack it in the old taxi and ship it up to South Melbourne, if that's okay.
I haven't got a taxi anymore. I got out of that.
Well, we have a problem then, Bob. Hey, Bob.
You might be able to harness up Leanne.
Thanks for sharing some of your life stories today. It's fascinating. You've been on the planet for quite a while, and back in the day with and I do apologise again on behalf of me, Tim Armstrong, Glenn Galloway, Adam Hamilton, and about five others who used to bail out of probably your taxi, I'd say. So we do apologise.
You got lucky you didn't get pinned up against the fence then, Matt. You
dodged I didn't know what we were dealing with at the time. I got to say, we didn't know he was Dirty Harry. And good luck with the mare too. She sounds like it's a lovely story about her career and her life and how she came about. And it sounds like she's doing the job for you. And she's going to have a little break and we'll see her in the near future.
Yeah, it's just a week or so off, I think, and just calm her down again. She got a little bit excited in the rainstorm yesterday when we came out of the stalls to put her in the float. Down it came in buckets and she got wet and didn't want to go anywhere and I had to drop the cart. We both got very wet, which wasn't good fun.
Oh, well, look, Bob, it's been wonderful listening to you this morning and hearing about, like Matt said, your life stories and some of those other stories. Maybe we need to get you back on Cracking the Codes at another date to get some updates and hear some more of these wonderful stories. So thanks for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome and nice to hear from you all.
Bob Kutchenmeister there. And the Mickey was talking about was Michael Cole, who's a neighbour and a trainer as well. And also proprietor of the Devcom Properties, a great sponsor in harness racing. So they're the two goals for Bob, as Leanne to win at Melton and complete a treble for Bob. And she'll be set for the McNamara Trotters Cup, which at Geelong on Cox Plate night. So he's a legend.
Every time when I heard Leanne, it made me automatically think of Rochelle.
Yeah.
The journey from Milan to Minsk off Seinfeld. Simone, I don't want to slur the girls from Sacred Heart, but did they also engage in similar activities in taxis in Geelong?
Oh, I was never allowed out, so I can't put my hand up and say that I did that. Yes, there was probably things going on, but...
Were you locked in the family basement?
Yeah, a bit like that.
Gee, yes. We're learning too much this morning, Dan. I'm cracking the codes.
Yes.
Explain a few things.
And I think because I used to, you know, do horse competitions and that, by the time I was old enough to go out, I had competitions on, so it wasn't like you needed a late night the night before. You just needed to be home and clean your gear and have your horse all ready and get ready for an early start. So I didn't really do the nightclub scene very often at all, and I honestly can say that it's not something that I wished I had have done. The few times that I did it in Geelong, remember the old Lyric, Matt? You may have been.
Was there one called Escalations or something as well? I remember Adam Hamilton and I were there, and he gave me a drink full of Tabasco sauce as a prank on my birthday, and and it had chili and everything in it as well. So,
and there's the Refinery, which was the Geelong Hotel. I mean, I went there.
The Bush Inn was the main one we used to go to. Adam Hamilton and I used to at lunchtime. There was the Geelong West TAB, which was right opposite. There's a pub down there as well, and we used to put on big overcoats at lunchtime and go and bed at the Geelong West TAB.
Down Packington Street.
Down Paco to the Geelong West TAB. A miracle.
All those memories. Matt, we could have a show just listening to you and your antics.
Packington Street memories, yeah.
Yeah, the old Geelong College days.
Indeed.
Yes,
all right,
enough Sacred Heart girls hanging out the windows and yelling out to you all.
They used to ogle us, Dan, the Sacred Heart girls.
I bet. And I bet you ogled them with probably your tongues hanging out too.
Yep.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
The last couple of weeks on Cracking the Codes, we've had a little bit of an international flavour. We were speaking to Clint Hutchison about Hong Kong racing, and then last week Matt Hill and his race calling all over the world. And we're following that theme a little bit this morning, and we've got Craig Evans, who is another race caller, of course, who has called in many, many countries across the world, joining us this morning on Cracking the Codes. Good morning, Craig. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, pleasure, Simone. Good morning to you.
Yeah, and you as well. And you're actually back in Australia now. You've been calling for many, many years. You've actually, you're a late starter compared to Dan Malecki. Dan started at 9 years old and you were about 14 years old. But,
well, Dan, with due respect, Dan was a ridiculously early starter. So.
He was. But Craig, a very, very decorated career and back in Australia. But gee, you've called in many countries also, the UAE, USA, South Africa, China, Malaysia, Singapore. Is it good to be back home?
It is good to be back. The last 4 years, I've spent 6 months of the year in Dubai calling the UAE season, so that comprises the Arabian tracks and also Maidan for the World Cup and what have you. But yeah, I thought when I started at 14, I was relatively young, but Dan's got a few years on me. If it's any consolation, I did think of being a race caller when I was around about 10 or 11, but that probably doesn't count. But yeah, I called my first race in Carnarvon, Western Australia, when I was 14. But Dan's got quite a bit of...
Oh, that's a good start, though, Craig.
Are you the youngest ever, Dan? Are you the youngest ever, Dan?
Yes, apparently.
Globally?
Apparently so.
Globally?
I was when I started, so who knows now. Yeah, made the Guinness Book of World Records in 1978. Now, I'm not to say that that hasn't changed since then, but that just means you're the youngest. I guess anybody could have a crack at it and fail miserably and still be listed as the youngest.
Yeah. Now, Craig, before we talk about the race calling, what fascinated me when Dan put through some notes, because Simone and I always badger each other about, because she went to school across the road from me in Geelong, and I went to Geelong College and she went to Sacred Heart, and then I took my kids on a bit of a retro drive not that long ago, and I showed them around the school, and they said, Dad, can we go and look at what Geelong Grammar looks like? So we drove over to Geelong Grammar, and the contrast between the two schools is quite amazing because you get lost in Geelong Grammar. It's almost like a community, like a university community, and you're living on campus at the moment.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. My wife, when we were in Singapore, we were in Singapore for 10 years, and my wife got a job as a school nurse. She's a highly qualified nurse. She's been a midwife and paediatrics and all types of things through the years, but she got a job as a school nurse. So then when we came back to Australia and decided to move to Melbourne. She got a job at Christchurch Grammar in South Yarra and then Melbourne Grammar. And then late last year, she was recruited as the lead nurse, the nurse manager at Geelong Grammar. So, yeah, we've been living on campus. She's been here since January. And, of course, I've moved back in April, so we're living on campus. But, yeah, looking out my window now, we're in a house just on sort of the outskirts of the property and we're looking out onto a vacant property up towards the Yuyang. So, yeah, it's a pretty special place. And as you say, Geelong.
Wooden up on the outside, Dreamcastle. Armadai with a shadow roll comes in.
Football and what have you. They're both pretty special places, I think.
So as you drive into that, just to get an idea, because there's a little boating area, there's horse stables, there's houses everywhere, there's magnificent tour. But it's very isolated, isn't it? What's it like living on a school campus day to day?
Well, it's not too bad. As I say, we're a little bit on the outskirts of the campus, but you still have to drive all the way through to get to our residence. But it's good. You know, we're country folk. We're from, as I say, Carnarvon in Western Australia. My wife and I went to school together, so we're country people. We love living in the city. We were in South Yarra at Melbourne Grammar for about 3 or 4 years, but. Yeah, it's good. It is a little bit isolated. Obviously, in South Yarra, you could walk out the door and go to one of 10 coffee shops within the walking range. Here, you've got to jump in the car, but we like it. We enjoy it. Not quite getting used to the cold. It is one of the coldest places I've ever lived, I must admit.
Well, you've been to a few places, Craig. Just explain. Last week, we went through with Matty Hill. I think there was about 14 different countries that he's called in. You must be somewhere around the mark because you've had a few homes and contracts in some fabulous places and called some of the world's greatest races. So just go through some of the places that you have worked at and called from.
Well, the main places I've worked at and called predominantly were Singapore. Obviously, we were there for 10 years and then the last 4 seasons in Dubai. But with that, I've been lucky enough when Trevor Denman left Santa Anita in Los Angeles, they were looking for a new caller, and I think it was always going to be an inside job, but they got myself and a guy from England over to call. So I called a couple of days of racing at Santa Anita, which is probably near enough to my career highlight. It was magnificent. But I've been lucky enough to call a few races in Malaysia and South Africa and a few other places. China, we went to the first year I was in Dubai. They ran a meeting in China, so that was interesting. There's a few other places I'd love to get to. I'd love to call a race in England and a few other places like that. I know Matty's called the Grand National quite a few times. But, yeah, I've been lucky. But with that, too, I've taken a few chances along the way, and those chances have paid off, which has been terrific.
Craig, just with Singapore, not sure exactly what the years were that you were there, but just the state of Singapore at the moment, it's quite sad for everyone to see the exodus away. Cliff Brownlee Friedman, Daniel Moore, so many others as well, Glenn Boss. What's your take on the Singapore situation at the moment?
Yeah, it has declined quite a bit. I tend to think I was very lucky. I was there through what we referred to as the Rocket Man years, which was pretty well 2009 to 2011. When I got there in 2007, it was sort of making a bit of a comeback and was on the rise, and then Rocket Man came along and really propelled Singapore, and they reintroduced the Chris Flyer International Sprint, and Takeover Target came up and won that the first year they introduced that. So we had the Singapore Airlines International Cup and the Chris Flyer Sprint, and everything was going gangbusters, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, I actually know a few reasons, but I won't disclose them. But, they cut off the international races, and from there it's been a slippery slide, and COVID hasn't helped. But I think Singapore was on the decline before COVID came around, just because of a few managerial decisions that were made along the way. They've got a few issues there, obviously, with the illegal gambling as well, that really sort of takes away from the profits of the club. But, yeah, sad to see how it's going, because when we were there, we were racing pretty well three times a fortnight, plenty of racing, plenty of prize money, but everything's been cut back over the last few months.
Craig, one of the races that you did call at Dubai was the Dubai World Cup back in 2019. It must be a massive thrill to call a race like that, and we'll take a listen to the replay in a moment. But on a world stage like Dubai, how does it compare to calling races in other areas as well? Because I can imagine it would be almost the pinnacle as well.
It is. It's bigger than I don't think anyone in Australia really appreciates how big it is. It's a little bit isolated from Australia because of the time frame. I think the World Cup's about 4 a.m. in the morning. So I know if I was here, I probably wouldn't be getting it up. I'll be watching it on a replay. But this year, in a COVID situation, we still had 55 international horses come in from Japan, America, England, all over the place. And that's not including Godolphin and Shadwell. They had about another 20. So, it's a massive thing. And really, it's the reason I'm there. For 6 months of the year, you sit around and you call all the other races and it's a bit ho-hum. But you get to the World Cup week and it is quite magnificent. So just the build-up for 6 or 7 days in the lead-up to the World Cup. And the eyes of the world really are on you. As I say, it's a little bit out of the way from Australia, but certainly England, the US, it's you know, the pinnacle of racing for that week, and certainly a great thrill to be involved with it.
Now, Armadai didn't win the World Cup. She won one of the big races in the program. Was it the Shima or the Duty Free or one of those? And
The Dubai Turf, which used to be called the Duty Free.
Yep.
She won that over the 1800 metres, and then the next year when it was cancelled in 2020, she was back actually on the ground in Dubai. She was going to run in the Shima Classic, which is over 2004. So she would have been the first horse to ever have done that, the 1800 metres, and the next year the 2004. And she would have done it. She's clearly the best horse I've ever seen.
Do you like hearing your own voice back at you? Because we're just about to play that replay of the immortal Armadai. Do you cringe when you hear your own voice, or you're so used to it now?
I don't cringe. I'm used to it, but I don't particularly like it. I don't particularly like the voice coming back at me. But I think, and Dan's probably the same. If you want to improve in any aspect of life, you've got to monitor yourself. So pretty well every race I've ever caught, I've listened back to several times trying to improve on it. So I'm very used to it, but it's not something that I get off on.
All right, well, here you are with Armadai.
Wooden up on the outside, Dreamcastle. Armadai with a shadow roll comes out to the middle of the track, and trying to track it is Lord Glitters. They go to the final 300 metres, Century Dream in front, but here she comes, Armadai out in the middle. Quickly raced up, went to the front, running on hard is Vivlos between horses. Armadai in front, Vivlos is down the outside with Lord Glitters, but as Armadai well clear, Vivlos tries to get there. The Japanese knew it, the world suspected it. Tonight she confirms it. Armadai is an equine masterpiece and wins by a length and a half. Second Vivlos, third across the line, Lord Glitters.
And that was a fabulous call, Craig. Wow, you're going to be pretty happy to hear that again. As far as the champion racehorses, you mentioned Rocket Man before and probably the Pride of Singapore and Armadai, obviously, in Japan, but what are some of the other champion racehorses or the horses that have given you the highlights in your calling career?
Well, she's the best, Armadai. She was brilliant. But, you know, a few of the Godolphin horses that I called during the carnival a few years ago, the likes of Gaiath and Ben Battle, who won a Dubai Turf and came over here and ran second to Winx, of course, in a Cox Plate. You know, there's plenty of them. Mishrif, who won the big race in Saudi on the dirt this year and then came back and won the big race, the Shima Classic in Dubai on the turf, which was quite remarkable. Chronogenesis ran in the Shima Classic this year. But even the horses like Mystic Guide, who we don't know too much about here in Australia, of course, being a dirt horse, but it went over there and won the Dubai World Cup this year as an American horse that's in the Godolphin stable. It was a really good one. But certainly my time in Singapore, you know, the best was Rocket Man. But we had a horse called Jolly Shinju who won a Triple Crown, and she's got some progeny racing over here at the moment. But there were some good ones. But certainly Armadai, you know, the pick of the bunch. She's an absolute freak, and I dare say when she was at her peak, she was the best in the world.
Craig, not only have you called horse racing, but greyhounds as well, and that's how I got to meet you many, many years ago. And I was over at the Perth Cup back in 2006, and there was a greyhound going around called Superman that provided a terrific race final. And when we listen to the replay again, because we love hearing your voice, even if you don't, but we do, when we listen to the replay, the very end of it, and you'll know what I'm getting at, is that do you actually plan something prior to a race, a big race, of what you potentially may say if that greyhound or horse wins, or is it something that just comes naturally at the time in the heat of the moment? Let's take a listen to Superman winning the 2006 Perth Cup.
Ready, racing. Superman boxed out brilliantly straight to the front over Gordon's Larry. Up to third, Philistilla, followed by So Bizarre, Charlesworth, True Touch. Around them goes Chopper, Nimbus and Lovell's Pride at the rear. Superman through the pen, led four lengths over Gordon's Larry. The inside, Philistilla, then So Bizarre, well back, Chopper, Nimbus, followed by Charlesworth, out of play, Lovell's Pride and True Touch, but off the back in 1874, and Superman flies out by nine lengths as they turn over Philistilla and Gordon's Larry. Superman bolts Waltz in the first hit of the Cup by 9 lengths over Phyllis Diller. Third goes the way of So Bizarre, then Charles Worth, Gordon's Larry and Chopper Nimbus. Behind them, Lovell's Pride and True Touch at the rear of the field.
And Craig, that was the call of Superman. And like I was alluding to, when you, with even with Arm and Eye, you have a few little statements or sentences at the end of the race. Is that something that you plan?
Generally, I don't plan it to a great degree. I will be honest. The Arm and Eye one was the only time I've ever called a race where I've written something down because I knew she was going to win. And I actually had that written down in front of me, and I thought about that a lot. A lot of times, and Dan, I'm sure, is the same, you've got to think of a few things that that may come up, and you know, if that horse won, that would be, you know, might work well, or that might work well. But generally, I've always been of the belief that the animal is the star of the show, and we're just sort of relaying it. So I don't go overboard to try and come up with anything too clever. But I like to entertain myself. There was a greyhound that won Ballarat last week, and its name was Tillotson, which I presume was named after Johnny Tillotson, who was a singer in the 60s, and his biggest song was Poetry in Motion. It won, and I said, this is Poetry in Motion. Now, there would not probably have been one other person listening or watching or whatever who even gave that a second thought, but I was quite chuffed by it. So I like to sort of entertain myself sometimes.
You've got to satisfy yourself, Craig, don't you?
There can be some lonely times up there in the crow's nest, Craig, so I understand fully. Dan goes quite mad sometimes talking to himself. Hey, you mentioned Santa Anita, and I've, as Dan and Simone know, because I made them watch a documentary on Ruffian, I'm fascinated with the glory days of Santa Anita and Del Mar and all these places, Belmont Park. What was the era of Santa Anita? What was going on there at the time? Who were the big trainers and horses, and what was the scene like at Santa Anita?
Well, I was only there for a week. I called two days of racing. I think they had a four-day meeting, as they call it over there. They race Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And I called on the Saturday and the Sunday. So it was just a rank-and-file meeting. It was in February of 2016. So there was no big races, not a lot going on, to be honest with you. But the thing that struck me, and you'd be the same having been there, Matt, is that I imagine when you look, you know, at a movie like Seabiscuit, that Santa Anita was painted up to look in the old days, you know, the lime or the light green and the, you know, the bird shit yellow sort of colours that were all over the place. But you get there and it's exactly what it looks like. It is so historical and so beautiful, really. It was just amazing to be a part of it. But what I will add, and Dan would probably get a kick out of this, it was the worst commentary box I've ever been in. It was atrocious.
Gee, that takes some doing.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll correct that by saying the worst big-time commentary box I've ever been in.
Yeah, sure.
It's shocking. But, yeah, it was great, which is something you'd imagine. You know, you look at Santa Anita or you look at Belmont Park, very lucky at May Dan, it's magnificent. Crunch in Singapore was magnificent, but yeah, Santa Anita was terrible, but the actual facility itself and the history that's around that was just quite amazing.
Just reminded me of something. I went to the Hong Kong International Races, and you know how some places just put it on, just absolutely put it on. And I went to the Hong Kong races in 1999, and we went into the secondary press area. This is the secondary press area for the spillover deros like me. There was an oyster tower, like full of oysters, and there was lobster and roast thrice cooked confit jus duck and all this sort of stuff. And the bloke apologised for not allowing us into the number one press room where the food was better. So there are contrasts, aren't there, Craig, between the Dero-y caller's box at Santa Anita. But some of the places you go, I imagine at the UAE, sometimes it blows you away with what they call the basics.
Yeah, well, I've been to Hong Kong, I think, 5 times in the international races, and I know exactly where you're saying. There's a secondary media centre down on ground level, and I must admit the food there is as good as I've tasted. And, you don't go for the food, but gee, it's a nice little cherry on top when you get something decent.
Well, Craig, it's a bit of a reality check now. You're back in Victoria calling, living near Geelong. Like you mentioned, the weather can be a little bit cool and you're calling many greyhound races, but I know where you're located, it's quite central to a lot of the tracks. So that'll just bring you back a notch or two. You're not going to get the catering that you got in Hong Kong or Dubai. But, Craig, it's been wonderful having you on Cracking the Codes this morning. Thanks for giving us a little bit of a snapshot about your travels around the world and calling races.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Another great guest in Craig Evans on Cracking the Codes. And guys, can't wait to do it all again next week. Until then, see you later.
Looking forward to it. See you next week.
Yeah, have a great week.